In this chapter on sources of information, we're primarily concerned about expertise and evaluating the claims of experts. It's obvious that for most of the information that we get, we're highly dependent upon other people. My plumber and my car mechanic, I'm completely dependent upon them for their expertise when it comes to fixing my plumbing or fixing my car. Now, here's some important things to remember about expertise and experts. An expert is simply somebody who knows a lot more about a field than most people do. So that means that there are experts in everything. There are experts in, as I've already said, plumbing and car repair, experts in the philosophy of Schopenhauer. There are people in small towns who are experts about what everyone else is doing in that particular small town. So you can be an expert in a particular field, and you don't have to have any fancy letters after your name or anything like that. Three important characteristics of expertise to remember: that experts, first of all, are not foolproof, that experts can be wrong. In fact, experts often disagree, and when two experts disagree, it's guaranteed that at least one of them is wrong. Expertise also comes in degrees. Someone can be more or less an expert. One person can be an expert, and another person can be an expert in that same field and more of an expert than the first person. Experts are also experts in particular fields. Just because someone is an expert in one field, that doesn't make them an expert in any other field. So just because somebody is an expert in let's say, 17th century philosophy, that means that they know a lot more about 17th century philosophy than most people do, but that doesn't necessarily translate into expertise in anything else. So they can be a well-regarded expert in that area, and then the average person off the street may know more in another particular area than they do. Evaluating claims to expertise. An appeal to an expert can be thought of as a kind of argument. The premise goes, an expert says that this claim is true. Conclusion, therefore it's true. Or in more detail, some person E is an expert on some subject S. That's their particular field. This claim involves that subject S. E says that this claim is true, therefore the claim is true. Now, notice that the claim has to be in the person's field of expertise. Are these arguments valid? Well, the answer is no. Of course they're not valid. What would it mean to say that they were valid? Well, what it would mean is, remember, valid means if the premises are true, then the conclusion must be true. It would have to be the case that if this person says this in this field, then it must be true. You'd have to have an expert that was infallible. Now, presumably only God's going to be that kind of expert. So if you claim that those arguments are valid, then you're claiming that experts can't possibly be wrong. But we know that's not the case. So these arguments are invalid. But just because they're invalid doesn't automatically make them bad. If the premises are true and the person really is an expert, then these arguments can be inductively strong, which is, of course, our goal here. Okay, there are seven important questions to ask about claims of experts. First one is, do we care enough about this to really even worry about who's the expert? Well, there are some things that are just trivial. For instance, how many blades of grass are there out on the oval in front of the Bailey Business Center? That's a trivial issue, and somebody can be the expert, but we really don't care. Other claims, the information costs are just too high. So this is going to cost too much money for us to evaluate that. So we really don't care about it. It's just not very important to us. The second question, is this a field in which there really could be an expert? So presumably there are fields where there are areas of issues where there just are no experts. Does vanilla ice cream taste better than chocolate? Well, who's the expert? The expert is, I guess, everyone. It's just, does it taste better to you? Somebody can portray themselves as the expert on vanilla versus chocolate, but that's not the kind of issue in which there could be an expert. Third question. First two questions are relatively trivial. The third question is very important. Is this person really an expert on the relevant issue? So before you can decide to take this person's word, you have to decide, are they really an expert? Now, how do you go about evaluating that? We'll look at that in a bit. Okay, even if they are an expert, you rarely get the claim from them. It's usually from another party. So the media somehow, a newspaper report or a TV ad, or television news story or something like that. And you have to ask, has this person been quoted accurately? So they said this, but was the claim taken out of context? Did you get just a little sound bite and that makes them seem like they're saying something very simplistic, but the issue may be very complicated. So a lot of times, in especially TV interviews, what you'll get is on the news, you get a 10-second sound bite from an interview where the camera crew took 30 minutes of footage. So you may get the one thing that the expert just really regretted saying, but they get portrayed as the expert. So you have to always ask, have they been quoted accurately? Five, is this an issue in which the experts are mostly in agreement? Now, if the experts are mostly not in agreement, then you don't know what to believe, right? There's no consensus here among the experts. If they are in agreement, then you should be able to take their word for it. Six, is this claim something unusual or surprising? If it's unusual or surprising, then we're going to learn later on in the semester that it's already got a low probability of being true. And so experts can very often be wrong. If the expert says that it's true and it's pretty plausible, then that's an even stronger case than the expert saying something that's implausible. Seventh question, is there any reason to think that the source might be biased? Do they stand to gain something? Do they stand to benefit from making this claim? If so, that's a reason to suspect them. Or is there any reason to think that they might just be mistaken? It may not necessarily be something devious here. They might not be trying to manipulate people, but there may be some reason to think that they're just wrong. Okay, these seven questions apply to every source. It doesn't matter what the source is, right? If an answer to one of the questions is no, just one or more, if the answer to at least one of the questions is no, then we'll call that a fallacious appeal to expertise. So who do we listen to? Well, we listen to experts. And since if you're seen as an expert, that automatically confers some aura of justification upon you. It's not at all surprising that people try to fake expertise. And if somebody can get this aura of expertise, then that allows them to influence us in particular ways. As far as advertising, it gets us to buy things and also may get us to vote in a certain way in a political campaign. So how do you fake expertise? Well, genuine experts have certain characteristics. What are these characteristics? They may have degrees. They may have a certain vocabulary. They may just have a certain look about them. And non-experts can try to look like those experts, and therefore they look like they have these characteristics too. So we'll call these halo effects. A halo effect literally is when a person has a good quality, we tend to think that they have other good qualities. So people that exhibit certain good characteristics like being good looking We tend to attribute other good characteristics, like being morally good, so on like that. And here are some of these things that confer these halos upon people. So, certain advanced degrees from particular institutions, or affiliation with particular institutions, like you teach at Harvard, or knowing the jargon in a particular technical vocabulary. Certain props, like having a lot of books in your library, so on. Wearing a white lab coat. Wearing a particularly expensive-looking business suit. Other tricks, and here's one that can be really effective, and it gets discussed in the book, is appearing to go against your self-interest. Now, you remember reading in the book about the psychologist who did the experiment at the restaurant. And when people would order, he would say something like, you know, I really shouldn't be telling you this, but I know that's one of our most expensive dishes, but it didn't come out very well when the chef did it tonight, so I really don't recommend that you get that. I think you'd have a much better meal if you get this other thing. And the other thing was slightly less expensive. Well, it looked like this person was acting against their self-interest. Because the more expensive the order, of course, the bigger the tip. And in the end, it turned out that this psychologist got much bigger tips in the long run because people were rewarding him for this apparent acting against his self-interest. Okay, other sources of authority, along with expertise. One's an appeal to tradition or an appeal to popularity. Everybody thinks this is good. Everybody thinks this is right. This is called the bandwagon effect. So the bandwagon effect is when people accept or endorse a view, they accept a claim or they endorse a particular position, they vote for a particular candidate because other people do. So everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon. Here are some things to be careful about. One, if something matters to you, you need to not just passively take somebody's word for it, you need to actively evaluate those claims. You always need to be careful about your sources, credentials, and track record. So people say that they have degrees, people act like they have certain institutional affiliations. Well, check those out. Or it may be that this person, although they look like they're an expert and they firmly assert this is the case, it may be the case that they don't have a very good track record. They're wrong most of the time. And the rest of the experts in this particular field just generally disregard what they say. If it really is important to you, don't just take one person's word for it. Check out several sources. Always be careful about whether a expert is biased. So if a person has a vested interest, you need to be careful about what they're saying, why they're saying it. So is it in the expert's self-interest to deceive you? We call that acting from a vested interest. So do they stand a profit from this? Example would be the National Rifle Association, who will sponsor several studies, or the tobacco industry. Tobacco industry sponsor a study that shows that smoking is not so bad for you, so on. Do you have any reason to trust the study? Do you have some reason to suspect that the study is flawed? Well, the people who produce that study are paid by the tobacco industry. They have a vested interest in the results of the study. That doesn't necessarily mean, we're going to point this out later on this semester, it doesn't necessarily mean that their claim is wrong. It does mean that you should examine it very carefully. Or is there just some special reason why this person might be mistaken? Do they have some reason to not be fully aware of all the evidence? Something like that. If it really is something of interest or concern to you, develop your own expertise. Go out and gather your own data. Look at your own information. And continually try to look at this issue from as many perspectives as you can. Well, that's the end of our discussion of the chapter on sources of information.